Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What is up, NFL fans? Welcome back to another NFL Whip Around podcast. I'm Jeff Hartman, joined by Coach Kevin Smith. And quick call to action, if you're watching live on YouTube, give us a like, subscribe to the channel. We do appreciate it. And Fans First Sports Network, trying to bring you the best and the latest sports news around and opinions. And make sure also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, give us a five-star rating. It does help, believe it or not. But with all that out of the way, Coach, what's going on?
What's up, Jeff? We're getting to draft season, man. You know, I was right before we came on, I was just reading a little bit about the draft. So I'm starting to ramp up for that a little bit.
It kind of feels like the calm before the storm, you know. Yes. Like the NFL free agency is really amped up, and then it kind of dies down as the second wave is kind of hitting a lull before the NFL draft, and all the coaches and are down in the league meetings down in Florida, and you're getting some good quotes and stuff like that down there. But we're going to talk about a lot of different things on this NFL Whip Around podcast. And I want to start off with something that is interesting to me. And a lot of players have been dealt via trade this offseason. And a lot of times when you see the trade after it's completed, you're left wondering, what the hell's going on? How are they getting these players for such little draft capital? Mainly, that's the number one priority. Whether you're talking about the Steelers trading Kenny Pickett, a first-round draft pick, to Philadelphia, they didn't get much in return. Maybe it's the Steelers getting Justin Fields. They did not send a lot to Chicago. Or most recently, maybe it's L'Jarius Sneed, who went to Tennessee for what felt like piddlings. Now, there is a caveat to this. And I think that for me, at least with the Sneed conversation, it's the contract. Like, they have to pick up that contract, and he's going to want a new contract because these trade values seem off. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't get the Sneed one. You know, okay, Pickett, I get it a little bit in that the Steelers were willing to move on, and he didn't seem to want to be there, and you know, he had the old falling out thing. I get that. The Fields trade, I get, because the Bears mismanaged the market, like the Bears often do. You know, they just kind of missed the, you know, they misread the situation and they bungled it.
Right.
Sneed, though, I mean, they got a third round pick in return for him. If he had played in Kansas City, and then, you know, after the season was over, they decided they wanted to move on in some way, shape, or form, there's no way they would have gotten anything worse. They could have gotten the same compensation and had him play for them this year. So I don't understand why they felt the urgency to move on from him. Do you?
No, the whole thing with Snead, though, makes sense with the salary cap perspective. So Snead, when they franchise tag him as a cornerback. So you're going to have to pay him a one-year pretty hefty contract in terms of cornerbacks because it's the top 10 average at the position. So when they trade him, now granted, I don't think they got any draft capital in 2024. Everything was in 2025. And so when they trade him, they're then shuffling that contract off of their books. Now Tennessee has to pick up that franchise tag, which is, again, only a one-year deal. And then after that, if they want to keep him, they're going to have to pay him, and they're going to have to pay him a lot of money. So the Chiefs, and maybe sometimes, and I've always felt this, that we as fans sometimes overvalue players. And we think that certain players are way better than they actually are in the way that the coaches view things. But this ties into a topic that we also wanted to talk about, which is draft capital in and of itself. So Snead, I think, went for a third round and a seventh round pick. Justin Fields was for a conditional sixth round pick in 2025. Kenny Pickett was a draft pick swap, essentially. The Steelers traded Deontay Johnson to Carolina. That was, again, for another player in Dante Jackson and a draft swap. So what is your take on draft capital? When you're talking about being general manager, you have to think about the salary cap, and you have to think about your draft capital almost as much as you do the cap. What's your take on draft capital and how to manage it?
Remember when it felt like they didn't make trades in the NFL, right? Yeah. When it felt like that was something baseball did, but really the NFL didn't engage in those trades. I think that was because you had this generation of general managers who were from the old school, whereby everything kind of was built up through the draft. A lot of those guys had come up and made their bones in the league when free agency wasn't even a thing. And so they saw it as risky. And, you know, there was just this almost like biblical sentiment that, you know, you have to build through the draft. But those guys are gone. And you have this new generation of general managers who, you know, they all grew up playing fantasy sports. They all grew up playing Madden. They all grew up being amateur GMs before they were real GMs. And in that world, wheeling and dealing, man, making the move, being aggressive, trying to win now, and that's all the norm. You look at the Titans, right? Tennessee was a bad football team this past year, you know, bad enough to get their head coach fired. And yet they have been incredibly aggressive. I mean, they're shelling out massive contracts to guys who are not necessarily like, yeah, I mean, I know Snead is, but I mean, Calvin Ridley's 29 years old. They gave him 90-something million dollars. I mean, they're like picturing themselves in win-now mode. I mean, if you rewound the clock 10, 12 years, they would never do that. They would see themselves as you know, in a rebuild. And so the idea of the rebuild in the NFL, I think, is very, very different than what it used to be. And so people use their pieces. GMs use their pieces, their draft capital, to try to get good now. So it's a big break from, obviously, past practice.
Do you think that the LA Rams really did do a number on this whole approach to the NFL draft in terms of when their general manager came out and blatantly said, F them picks, I'll trade them all away if we can win a Super Bowl now? And I think that more and more there's teams that are like, okay, there's some credence to that. The thought of we cannot trade our draft capital. I guess to me, the follow-up question for you, Coach, is does this sound like a we want to win now versus we want to have a sustained level of success by building a team through the draft? Is that kind of where we're going at this point in time?
Well, yeah, the Rams approach is great if you win it all.
Exactly.
You know, if you get it done, nobody can fault you for it. But if you
can
don't,
say F them picks when you're hoisting a Lombardi trophy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But when you don't, people get fired. So it's certainly a gamble. You know, the Steelers approach for years and years, the Steelers were kind of the model of stability in terms of building through the draft. But even Pittsburgh now has broken with that tradition. Omar Khan, the new general manager, has been incredibly aggressive. So I think that's the new reality in the NFL. The idea that, you know, you're not that far away. It hinges on two things, really. I mean, one, you got to land the quarterback. It's all just kind of a fool's errand if you don't have, maybe it doesn't have to be the absolute elite quarterback, but you better have a top 10 quarterback, or at least a guy who's playing like a top 10 quarterback in January. There's that. And then two, with this parity that the NFL is trying to create. The perception that everybody has a shot, I think, is one that is kind of taken root in the league, and that you don't feel like you're ever that far away. All right, we were bad this past year, but next year we're going to get a soft schedule. We got a ton of cap space and we got some good draft picks. Let's go for it. Let's load up. So I think that's what's driving the league, the mentality in the league right now.
Do you think parity is just a false narrative, though? Is it really? It's not. I look at it and say, this is a laughing stock. There's parity in terms of week in and week out. Yeah, you might have some upsets. When it comes down to it, the worst Kansas City Chiefs team that we've seen in I don't know how many years still won the freaking Super Bowl last year. You know, and injuries will derail anyone's season. Look at the Cincinnati Bengals last year when Joe Burrow goes down. But as an example, I mean, the parity is there, but is it really there? Do these teams like the Tennessee Titans, despite the amount of moves and money they've put out towards their new roster, do they really have a chance outside of their division? I can't say that I believe that that's a factual statement.
Well, it depends what you believe the bar is. If you're the Tennessee Titans, the bar right now is not winning the Super Bowl. The bar is getting to the playoffs. Okay. And I think if you're Tennessee, you believe that you can clear that bar. You know, like when you look at this past season, I don't remember what the exact number was, but it was something like heading into like week 17 with two games to go. There had only been like two or three teams that have been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. True. And so if you can make the playoffs, if you are a middle of the road team or even a struggling team, maybe you're a bottom third team in the NFL, but you think you can make the playoffs and that progress that you show is going to, you know, get those coaches rehired, get those GMs rehired. Yeah, man, that then parity is a real thing and you're going to go for it. Obviously, for teams that are in the upper echelon, that's not the goal, man. And yes, I think right now there's probably, if we look ahead to 2024, there's probably only a handful of teams that have a realistic shot of winning the Super Bowl. But there's probably 20 some teams that have a realistic shot of making the playoffs. And I think for those teams, parity is an important concept because it gives them the hope of being able to get to the postseason.
You talk about teams with a realistic shot. I think maybe next week we should dive into which teams we actually think heading into the draft do have a realistic shot, both the AFC and NFC. I think that there's probably more in the AFC than the NFC. But then again, now that I think about it, maybe not. We'll talk about that. We'll table that for next week in terms of teams that we think are legitimate contenders and those that, like you said, in the Tennessee Titans case, are just trying to make the postseason, make some noise, show steps in the right direction. Speaking of the Titans, in a way, what do you think has been the riskiest move in free agency so far? I know where you're going with this. That's why I teed it up with the Titans. Go for it, Coach.
Yeah, for me, that Calvin Ridley move blows my mind, honestly, on their part. I mean, they gave $90 million over 4 years to a guy who's going to be 30 years old, who's got an injury history. He's had a couple off-the-field issues. And they're coming off of a season where, I mean, Tennessee was not – they were not a good football team last season. And so – I don't know if the mindset there is that they feel in the AFC South, which is not particularly strong. Like if they make these upgrades, they had a lot of cap space that they can win the division. Their quarterback room isn't the best in the league. I mean, they've got Will Levis there and he appears to be the guy, but they brought in Mason Rudolph to compete with him. That screams middle of the road at best. And so the Ridley move strikes me as curious. The Snead move makes a lot more sense to me. He's a much younger player, and you don't have to pay him, you know, just yet the big salary. But like, I'm baffled about that Ridley move. That seems like a big, big risk to me.
So for the Ridley thing, the Steelers were interested in Calvin Ridley, and I'm sure a lot of teams were. He is a good route runner. He is experienced. He is an aging veteran. I'm not saying he's in his 30s yet, but he's in the back nine of his career. We'll call it that. But that price tag was just incredible. That almost screamed like a Christian Kirk deal. If you remember a couple years ago, when he was a free agent out of Arizona and the Jacksonville Jaguars paid him this King's ransom. Like, wait a second, Christian Kirk? Well, what are we talking about? And that changed the whole dynamic as to what wide receivers were then going to take. I'm going to go in a different direction, and I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm going to go with a position group. Last year at this time, we were talking about the devaluing of the running back position. We were talking about how the running backs weren't seen as a valuable commodity. This offseason has seen a shift in that. My risk, though, in terms of risky, is not them signing a running back, if a team went out and went that route in free agency, it was sometimes the amount of money they were guaranteeing these players, especially those that have a history of being injured. So Josh Jacobs is a tremendous talent, but he has been injured a lot. He signed a 4-year deal with Green Bay, guaranteed money, $12.5 million. Not too bad. Here's where it gets crazy. The Philadelphia Eagles signed Saquon Barkley to a 3-year, $37.75 million deal with $26 million guaranteed at signing. That guy hasn't been able to stay healthy his entire career. And so you're going to give this guy $26 million? That's a risk, in my opinion. Could it pay off? Absolutely. Joe Mixon with Houston gets $23 million guaranteed. It's incredible, some of these deals. DeAndre Swift, $14 million guaranteed with Chicago. Tony Pollard with Tennessee gets 10.4. It's incredible. And it's just, what's really incredible to me is the fact that you have a situation where you're looking at, again, go back to last year. We were talking about running backs and how no one appreciated them, no one valued them, and now you're getting someone like Saquon Barkley getting big money. Coach, what are your thoughts on the running backs?
One, just a reflection of the significant increase in the salary cap. They have the money.
Yeah.
Two, I think the running back market, because there were so many talented players on the market this year, teams like Philadelphia identified the guys they really want. You know, Philadelphia really wanted Barkley. And I think to lock him in, they gave him that big money contract. And then that really sort of set the bar, and other teams were willing to pay that money as well. Some of the moves are intriguing to me at the running back position. Like, I don't know why, other than he's younger, but I don't know why Green Bay wanted Jacobs over Aaron Jones. Like, I think Aaron Jones is a really good running back and fits what they want to do up there, Matt LaFleur's offense, really well. So why Jacobs? You know, he's 3 years younger. Maybe that's the answer right there. But you know, they lose now Jones to the Minnesota Vikings, to their rival, and that seems risky to me. We're talking about risky moves. Moving on from Jones and letting the Vikings snatch him up. Jacobs has had some injury issues himself. So I guess at the running back position, it's all a risk. You know, they could all go down at any minute. The shelf life is so short in Philly's. From their perspective, I guess they feel as though, you know, they're one of those teams on the short list that can compete for a championship. And if they get the best of Barkley, and if he's healthy, he's certainly a guy that can help them in that regard. So they got the cash and they're going to go for it.
It's going to be interesting. I do think that position is a risk, and it comes with the position. It's always going to be a risk. You're going to get hit every time you touch the football. And so that's where I'm going to go with this. Now, I do want to ask you just real general as a coach, the new kickoff rules that are being proposed and are going to be voted on in Florida, I'm struggling to even understand what the hell they're trying to do. To me, the kickoffs are basically null and void anyways, because everyone just kicks it out of the end zone. We saw a lot of fair catches where they get the ball at the 25-yard line if they fair catch a kickoff. I mean, I don't understand why they need to tweak it. And if anything, I never want to remove the onside kick. I never want to remove it, but it seems like some of these proposals, it would kind of make it obsolete. Coach, do your best to explain it to everyone, including myself, and what your thoughts are on the new kickoff rules that are proposed.
I can't. I hate it. I hate it. Jeff, are you too young to remember the old electronic football game where you...
Oh, that just vibrated?
Well, inevitably, what would happen in the electronic football game is you would spend like 8 minutes setting all your dudes up, and then you'd hit the vibrate button, and then within 3 seconds, there was a massive clump of plastic bodies just spinning in a circle at the middle of the field. That's what that kickoff proposal reminds me of, when you line up all the guys like basically right next to one another, and then you kick the ball down the field. I watched it in the XFL. It was a mess. The NFL is not proposing the exact same thing, but some similar stuff. I'm a purist. I like the old kickoff. I do think you can probably create some intrigue with the, you know, transitioning away from the onside kick and going to maybe, what are they talking about? Like a 4th and 15 play?
Fourth and 15 or 4th and 20. I've heard both.
Okay. Proposed. I think that there's some intrigue there. I think that there's some fascinating scheme stuff that you can get into. You can allow for really creative coordinators maybe to give their team a better shot than just maybe the luck of a big bounce on an onside kick. But the getting rid of the kickoff, I hate. And I know, man, they're saying to themselves, like, hey, we had too many touchbacks last year, so let's bring it back, but in a safer environment. I mean, I get it. I don't know, man. Move it back a little bit, man. Make it a little bit more just like the way that it used to be. I guess you'd have to show me the numbers that shows definitively that the kickoff's a dangerous play. Maybe they exist. I haven't seen them.
So correct me if I'm wrong. They are basically going to move the lines. So you're talking about all the players on special teams, the kickoff team, the return team, 5 yards closer to one another. So they're basically like right on top of each other.
Yep.
Now, the only players that can move is the kicker who's kicking the football and the returner who's going to field the kickoff. And no one can move until the ball is caught.
Right.
So this is where it's interesting to me. So if I'm on the return team, I basically have to be turning around to know when my guy catches the ball. And once he catches the ball, I'm going to turn around, and these guys who have a clear vision of when the returner catches the ball are going to be running straight at me.
Yep.
So it's brace yourself, because I'm either going to get plowed over or they're going to run right by me. I guess I just don't understand what they're trying to do here. What is the purpose? So you're saying that they want to inject the return back into the game of football. Is that what their plan is? Because they're the ones that moved it out of the game of football. Devin Hester's don't exist anymore because they basically eliminated the kickoff. And here's what I don't like about the onside kick being, the 4th and 15, 4th and 20 type thing. I always go back to the second half of Super Bowl 30, Pittsburgh and Dallas in Arizona, when Bill Cowher did the surprise onside kick to start the second half. The Steelers recovered, and everything shifted at that point in that game. Now, no, the Steelers didn't win. Don't want to get into that. Neil O'Donnell, please don't bring that up. But still, what I remember, though, is if you eliminate that, that eliminates some of that surprise factor of the game. So if you have to declare, we're going to go for an onside kick, well, what's the point? Like, there's nothing that's surprising anyone there. I guess, so you're saying, in your opinion, you're thinking they're trying to bring the kickoff back into the game, but not have it be as dangerous?
Yeah, because you're reducing the amount of space in between the bodies, so the amount of open space that you have to run, and you're by not allowing anybody to move until the ball's caught, you're reducing, you know, again, the running start, the impact that it gets. If you watch the XFL and how they did it, it was just a muddle of bodies. They're really, I mean, I think there might have been like one time where a dude just popped it and he was gone. But for the most part, there wasn't any real space to set up anything resembling a creative return. I just tell you this, man, from a coaching perspective, scheming special teams is awesome because you got so much space to work with, and you can really get creative with your designs, setting walls, right? Switchback blocks. Man, when I was playing football back in the day, you used to have a guy that you would purposefully use to crack back on other teams when you knew that that one of the gunners would never see him coming, and you were bringing him from the opposite side of the field, and his whole purpose was just to lay that guy out. Now, granted, I get why that's being eliminated from the game, but you're now kind of going in the opposite direction where there's no space to sort of scheme anything interesting whatsoever. So I think it's unfortunate because from an X and O perspective, you're eliminating a really cool element of the game.
Two other things that are being proposed. One is the NFL trade deadline being pushed back. I believe right now it's after week 7. The Steelers has said they actually proposed it to go back to week 9. Another team and a couple other teams actually proposed it to go back to week 10. And then there's also a proposal that teams can challenge calls inside 2 minutes of the half. What are your thoughts on those two proposals?
I'm all for moving the trade deadline back. You look at the other sports in baseball, the trade deadline's like the end of August. I mean, they're like 85% done the season. You can still make trades. Now, I think that's too late personally, but week 7, you're a third of the way through the season, you know, a little bit more than that. So I like that idea. You know, I mean, I feel as though it gives teams the opportunity now to get a better assessment of where they are in a season, because like we mentioned before, one key injury changes your whole narrative. And right. So, I mean, you might say, hey, in week 7, we think we're this. And then in week 8, you have a significant injury and you're kind of locked in. So I really like the idea of moving it back. Yes.
What about the challenging inside 2 minutes, where right now it's coaches cannot do that. That's up to the booth.
No, I don't know. I just stop interrupting the flow of the game. It drives me crazy when you've got, you know, I don't know. I was watching the NCAA wrestling championships over the weekend, the Division I championships, and in one of the championship matches, the third period was interrupted four different times. The periods are only 2 minutes long. It was interrupted four different times by coaches' challenges, officiating challenges, replay challenges. And there, I was just like, my God, this is what sports are coming to now. They're just being micromanaged by the technology. And I get it. You want to get it right. But at some point, you got to let the games play, man. You know, and I don't want any more interruptions.
Would you be okay with the NFL getting away from the chain gang and having the chips in the football to distinguish first downs and end zone goal line type stuff?
I'm okay with that. I mean, as long as it allows for the flow of the game,
that should speed things up. Actually, yeah, they should. Yeah.
Obviously, because, it's got to work. I mean, obviously, but like, you know, I mean, we have a chip malfunction. We have no idea where the ball is supposed to be. You know, like,
I don't think the chain gang will ever go away. But I mean, you look at tennis. Tennis is the best replay system around. If you watch Wimbledon and there's a questionable serve, whether it's in or out, they will hold up their racket challenge. They look at the board, boom, and then they're back in play. Like, that is the quickest challenge of all sports. Bring that to the NFL. Did they get a first down? Let's look at the review. Boom. No, he didn't. He was short. The football, the chip in the football did not cross the line. All right. Line it up again. Here we go. So I'm all for that. But I don't think that would necessarily disrupt the game. And I don't even know if that's being proposed down in Florida. But all right. Let's finish this up with, in the spirit of March Madness, which is ongoing. What are your thoughts on the 12-team playoff system the NCAA is set to unveil this college football season? I have my thoughts, but I'm curious about yours.
Oh, I love it, man. I'm all for a competitive college playoff system. It always was absurd to me that you had playoffs at the lower levels, you know, the old 1AA, which is now, I guess, FCS, and Division II, Division III, et cetera, but you never had it at the top level. And that was because of the bowls and all the money that was involved in the tradition, et cetera. I get it all. But I think they're finding a way to fold the bowl games into a playoff. The bowls have become, I don't want to say irrelevant now, but with so many players now, big time players skipping them because they don't want to get hurt for the upcoming draft. They needed to find a way to include more teams in a postseason competition. There's always going to be controversy about the number of teams. 12's a little bit wonky. You're going to give like the top four teams buys. And then, you know, there's always going to be that debate about the 13th team being left out. But I would rather have a debate on the 13th team than on the fifth team, because, man, when you only have that four team system, you're legitimately leaving out teams that have a claim to be able to be in it, you know, like Florida State this past year. So I feel as though, you know, they're moving in the right direction.
This is, to me, the much needed step in the right direction. This past bowl season was maybe the worst bowl season that I can ever remember in my life. Players weren't playing, coaches weren't coaching, transfer portals going crazy. So I think they have to do one of two things. They either start to expand in this way, and I think this is a good starting point, or they tell players you can't transfer until after bowl season. You got to stay with your team. If you're going to leave for the draft and you don't want to participate in the bowl, that's your individual right. But the players transferring and moving around and coaches doing the same, it just cheapened the product. Now, I think that this is the first step in what should be, hopefully will be, them moving into a conference setup where you have conference tournaments that will then dictate who gets into maybe the top 12. So create four big super conferences or more, and then they play their way in. And so you eliminate the committee. You eliminate that discussion of, oh, Florida State, yeah, they finished undefeated or whatever, and they didn't get in, but their quarterback got hurt. We want the best product possible. So screw that. If you win and you get in, you're in. And I think they need to start mirroring the NFL playoff system and how they get into the postseason if they want to keep players where they are, playing for the entire season, keeping fans engaged. I think this is a great first step. I'm excited to see this playoff system the way they have it. And I'm going to agree with Coach Kelly out of UCLA. He was the one last year that said, look, this is what needs to happen. And he laid it all out there. you have regional super conferences and you play teams in your conference and you maybe have a couple out of conference games, but then the best teams from those conferences go into the tournament and then it's who can win. You just got to win out, and the brackets and how they're set up should be based off of certain criteria. Do you see it going that way as well?
I think it already is. You know, you've basically had now the SEC and the Big Ten expand to, I don't even know how many teams are in each, 17, 18 teams, something along those lines. The Pac-12 is all but gone.
Yeah.
So I would think in a couple of years, you're going to have maybe, yeah, like four super conferences, and then you're going to have to figure out how to include some of the Boise States, you know, that make a great run but aren't a part of all that. And obviously Notre Dame, they get their sweetheart deal, whatever the hell that is about. Why is Notre Dame still being treated like it's like 1974 and
Arab? Not a fighting Irish fan, I see.
I just don't know why there's this Notre Dame exceptionalism. I mean, I don't have a prejudice against the team. I just don't understand why, like, they're getting a sweetheart deal. But whatever. I think that they're moving already in that direction. And that would be intriguing. You know, one of the things that made the World Series so awesome for years and years and years before they started interconference play was the fact that the American League and the National League didn't play each other. And then, you know, you had that sort of special setup there. And that would be cool to see in college football as well, if you can have these sort of regional champions all play one another for a national championship.
College football is too good to have a bowl season like we had last year.
There was like 7,000 people in these, you know, 90% empty stadiums at what were once big games. So yeah, it was depressing.
And even the Rose Bowl was kind of like, meh. The Rose Bowl, you know, I mean, that's always been considered like the creme de la creme of the bowl season. It's just like, meh, I don't know. It was nothing. There was nothingness to me. And yes, you had those teams that said, you know, the Washingtons and the Michigans, obviously that was the national title game. You had those teams who were invested. Those players didn't go anywhere, but everyone else, they were just, it's the transfer portal. That's another part of this that's got to get fixed.
Yeah.
And that's for another show.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Coach. Hey, we don't have do you have a player profile this week? I don't think so. Do we?
Oh, we did not. We did not. We were kind of in a little bit of a dead period right now. Is. So we're going to start pivoting and looking ahead to the draft.
Yeah, for sure. And so why don't you tell everyone what's coming on the call sheet this week? Had a great episode last week.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my conversation with Big G, Sean Gurley. He gave us some great insight about his college football experience. And that was sort of like a prelude, kind of a kickoff, really, to getting into some draft stuff. I haven't done any draft coverage yet. And so we're really going to start to focus now on the draft. Going to look at the top 10. You know, what are the teams at the top most likely to do, and where's their focus? So that'll be the focus of the call sheet this week.
All right. Sounds great. Where can they find you on social media?
At KT Smith, FFSN, and on the Steel Curtain Network and FFSN YouTube channels, where I'm doing a bunch of one play breakdowns on a lot of the college prospects that are expected to be high picks.
Absolutely. Make sure you check that out. If you want to hear our Pittsburgh Steelers coverage, go to steelcurtainnetwork.com or Steel Curtain Network, wherever you get your podcast. And again, check us out on YouTube at Steel Curtain Network. You can find me on social media at jhartman, HARTMAN_PIT. It's been another NFL Whip Around. Coach, thanks for your time. We'll talk next week. Take it easy.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.